Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me for another episode of the Growing Up Chaotic Show, the show that provides a 360-degree view on all topics related to addiction, recovery, domestic violence, mental illness, mental health, everything involved with that. I am your host, Dawn Clancy. In 2014, approximately 5.2 million people in the U.S. suffered from Alzheimer's, a number that is expected to triple by 2050. There is growing evidence that diet and lifestyle can affect the brain, impact cognitive aging, disrupt hormone production in the body, and in some cases even spawn preventable diseases such as cardiovascular disease, strokes, autoimmune diseases, obesity, and diabetes. I know it's a lot to think about. And when it comes to our overall health and well-being, we really need to start paying attention to what we're putting into our bodies. So that's why Karen Unger is here with us today. She wrote this fantastic book, Brain Health for Life, Beyond Pills, Politics, and Popular Diets. As our featured guest today, Karen is here with us to talk about the inspiration behind her book and explain why she is so passionate about helping you take control of your health and your life. So let's welcome Karen to the show. Thanks for being with us today, Karen.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, so the book is just packed with such great information, and we have a lot to cover, so I want to jump right in here. You've been working on your book, Brain Health for Life, for a number of years, so I wanted to start off by just having you take us back to what initially inspired you to start this project.
Well, my background is in education and mental health, and for a number of years, I worked at Boston University at the Center for Psychiatric Rehabilitation and set up programs to help people with mental illness go back to college. And when I left there and came to Oregon, I worked with the Department of Mental Health and Addictions and received a report on the status of the health of people within the mental health system. And they reported that they lived 25 years less than the general population, and sometimes had as much as 5 or 6 very serious diseases. And when I heard that, I thought, well, why don't I set up a program to help people improve their diets and then improve their mental health? So about that time, I met a woman, Leanne Cavender, who worked with me on the book, and she is a licensed nutritional therapist. And she and I worked together to set up a program to help people with mental illness improve their diets, but unfortunately the program was not funded. So it intrigued me, and I began doing research and figured out that not only would this be good for people with chronic mental illness, but it would be good for everybody. And the more I read, as you said, the more passionate I got. I couldn't believe all the stuff that I learned. So I tried to put it all together in a way that was really readable. I did spend 4 years doing research. There's 50 pages of references, but I wanted to cover as much as I could and make it as readable as possible. So if someone was going to pick up this book, it's really, she said modestly, probably the only book they need to read, because I put together most of the information that you need to have a healthy brain.
Now, in the book, it's really interesting because you actually go in one of the chapters, you go into how the brain works, which I don't think a lot of people are aware of, I mean, because it is quite complicated. But I wanted to just have you briefly walk us through how our brain works so that we can begin to understand how, you know, what we're putting into our body, how that can ultimately affect us.
Well, first of all, the brain is probably one of the most complex things on the planet, and we take it so for granted. It's made up of billions of cells called neurons or nerve cells, and there are two types, basically, axons and dendrites. And then They are connected at synapses, which is where the messages are passed back and forth. And the messages are called transmitters. And they occur at these intersections. Now, in order to make this more clear, they're called neurotransmitters, I'm sorry. And it's at these synapses that electrical impulses are passed between these different nerve cells, and that dictates what's going to happen to us. So that's how we think, that's how we are able to do all our tasks of daily living. So the more connections we have, and there are billions of them, the healthier our brain. Now, what we need to do is eat good food, and there's basically, I'm going to talk about four things maybe. There's fat, that's probably the primary one, carbohydrates, proteins, and vitamins and minerals. So we need those for our brain to function, and I can talk about each of those if that makes sense.
Well, what I want to ask you next is, as someone who suffers with depression, or I don't like that word suffer, I manage depression. When I when I read your book and the idea kind of sunk in that, wow, if I would look more at my diet and what I'm eating, perhaps I could help. It would help me manage things a little bit more. Perhaps maybe I could get off of medication, or, you know, just I'd have a different tool in my toolbox to deal with depression. So here I am, I'm reading your book, this idea pops in my head, okay, what you're eating, you may need to change your diet. What could I be doing differently to help me manage my depression more by the foods that I eat? Like, what does that mean?
Well, first of all, you'd want to get rid of processed foods, because processed foods affect the brain in a certain way that interferes with the messaging. So all of the little neurons are covered with something called myelin, and it's a fat substance. So when you eat processed food, that disrupts that fat, and it's not as smooth, so your brain becomes inflamed. And that inflammation is one of the causes of depression. Also, vitamin B is important, omega-3s are important, and particularly omega-3s, our brains are 60% fat, and the myelin, the coating on the neurons, is actually 70% fat. So you want to have a very good quality fat that you take in. If you eat processed foods, they're often filled with what we would call omega-6s. So in our diets, we need a balance of omega-3s and omega-6s, 1-to-1 or 1-to-2. When we eat processed foods, that ratio becomes 1 to 20. And so the brain, instead of getting the good omega-3s, gets these omega-6s. And they don't allow the brain to function fully because they do cause the inflammation. So does that help? Vitamin B is also very important to ameliorate the depression.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And, you know, you mentioned two things. You mentioned inflammation and processed foods. What does inflammation in the body, I mean, we hear inflammation in the body can cause disease, but what is, I mean, when you say inflammation, I think my brain is not bruised, but it's swelling or something like that, you know? So what does that mean in the body, inflammation?
So let me use the example of, say you cut yourself. So what happens is there's the possibility of inflammation and infection. So your white blood cells rush to that area and try to clean out the infection or change the inflammation. In your brain, what happens probably more often is that there are free radicals that are let loose. So let's say you have a group of molecules that make up a cell. When you eat processed food, this is fairly complicated. I'll try to make it simple. When you eat processed food, it takes away one of those cells, and it becomes a free radical. So when you eat processed foods, there's more and more of these free radicals that are kind of running around, and they're like having a loose cannon on deck, and they interfere with the cell's functioning. If you eat good food that is antioxidant that fights these free radicals, then you can neutralize the infection or the inflammation. So inflammation is just something that's not working well and that disrupts the smooth functioning. I could talk about it in terms of within your blood vessels, for example. If there's inflammation, the white blood cells will rush to that, and in some cases, they'll form a little lump, and then the cholesterol will come around and come around that lump and make it bigger, and eventually it could come loose, and that's what causes a lot of the diseases like heart attacks and strokes and so on.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, it completely makes sense. I know these ideas are so complicated, and to just whittle them down to, you know, a couple sentences is quite a task. But before you mentioned the importance of getting, you know, the fats, carbs, proteins, and minerals in your diet that's ultimately going to support your brain health, I wanted to talk to you about fat, because especially in America, you mentioned the word fat and people freak out, right? Because we're so focused on food and calorie counting and, you know, paleo diet, Mediterranean diet, South Beach diet. Clearly, especially after reading your book, we've got it all wrong. And I was hoping that maybe you could walk us through a little bit, but what are we getting wrong about fat? Why are we so afraid of it if it's actually, you know, in certain amounts good for our overall health?
Well, the reason I called the book Brain Health for Life Beyond Pills, Politics, and Popular Diets is the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, is responsible for the food pyramid and now for the food plate. And one of the things they have recommended is that we eat a diet primarily of carbohydrates. And in the food pyramid, they recommended between 6 and 11 servings of rice, bread, cereal, pasta, and 30% of protein and dairy. They don't even mention fat. And yet we know that for a healthy diet, we need at least 30 to 40% fat, preferably 40%. So the food plate, the food pyramid did not emphasize fat. And somehow or another, we got into this idea that saturated fat causes heart attacks. And in spite of what the doctors say, the research shows that that's just not true. So people became afraid of fat, and they didn't realize that it's not fat that makes you fat. It's really the excess carbohydrates that your body can't handle. And when you eat a lot of carbohydrates, insulin floods your bloodstream. And while there's insulin in your blood, even though you're hungry, it can't access the fat that is stored. So you get hungry, you can't use the fat that's stored, and you eat some more carbohydrates, and that increases our weight. So this fear of getting fat is founded on the wrong ideas. The more fat you eat, in some ways, and studies have shown this, the more fat you eat, the more likely you are to be able to maintain your weight. And so there was an article in Time magazine a couple of months ago, and there was a big picture of butter, and it said, butter is back. And we're finally realizing that butter, eggs, good meat, all those things, nuts, are really good for you because it's good, healthy fat, and it's what our body needs.
Now, you mentioned butter, eggs, good meat, nuts, and in the beginning of the book, you actually talk about your family and how they moved to this country and they had farm and, you know, they work the farm and they produce their own food. And I can't help but wonder if back in the 1900s, right, this is when you referenced the time, if these people were worrying about what we worry about today when it comes to food, were they worrying about, oh, no, I might get fat because I'm eating butter and eggs? And it's just, you know, it's just a different mentality. And I almost wish we could go back to that.
Right.
You know?
We'd all be so much healthier. I think they didn't worry about what they ate. They wanted good food. And what they raised on the farm, you know, you had your own cows, so you had your own milk and you made your own butter and you did your own canning and you butchered your own meat, so, or killed your own chicken. So you knew what you were eating And they were all raised in the pasture. You weren't going to use artificial fertilizers on your vegetables because you had all this manure and so on. So everything was natural. And it's satisfying. You could eat as much as you want because people were active. You work hard on a farm. We used to have actually five meals because people would work so hard they'd need additional food. So, yes, it would be wonderful if we could go back to that.
So then if what's preventing us from doing that? I mean, I know that's a complicated question. In the book, you go into the politics and you go into, you know, the pharmaceutical industry. It's a billion-dollar industry. But what do we need to start doing as individuals to start taking better care of ourselves? Because clearly what we're taking off the shelves or what advertisers are telling us, I mean, I honestly feel like when you watch television and there's a new commercial about, you know, butter is bad, you just don't know what to believe anymore. And you go to the grocery store, and I don't know about most people, but I feel overwhelmed. I'm like, I don't even know if I should pick that apple up because it might be genetically modified.
I know.
You know, it's really so overwhelming.
I agree with you completely. And at the end of the book, I talk about what foods to eat, and it's choosing foods that are non-inflammatory. And so if you can choose foods that are non-GMO, if you can choose foods that are raised naturally, and eliminate processed foods, if you just eliminated processed foods, if you stopped eating foods out of packages, you'd probably be 80% there. So I know it's overwhelming, and the advertising is just incredible. One of the things that I found particularly disturbing when I was going through the supermarket was looking at foods that had the label health, I think they call it heart healthy. And there's a little red sticker that they put on that food. Well, what they don't tell you is that those foods paid dearly to have that label put on, and it's put on by the American Heart Association. So they have to pay an initial sum to put that on, and then they have to pay every year to keep that seal. So that's on packaged foods. I just stay away from packaged foods as much as I can of any kind. And I don't know if that helps, but you know, if you have a farmer's market, if you can eat whole foods, if you can raise pasture-raised chickens and beef and so on, that's your best bet.
You know, you said something before about how, you know, your family, again, you talk about in the beginning of your book, how they just wanted to eat good food, right? So for years, I was eating, you know, you throw it in the microwave and you zap it, these little calorie-controlled meals. And I really honestly, over time, created a really bad relationship with food. I can honestly say that at one point I hated food because it would make me feel guilty whenever I ate it. And just recently, I said to myself, I don't care anymore. I just want to eat food that tastes good and is good for me. That's it. I don't care if it says put oil in the pan or eat avocado. I'm so tired of it. I'm so tired of thinking about food in that way because it can actually taste good and be good for you.
Exactly. Which is why I talk about not only what you should eat, but why. So if you're eating an apple, for example, what does that apple do to your brain? What does that apple do to your health generally? So it's going to give you vitamins and minerals. There's some sweetener, so it satisfies your need for some kind of sweetness. Excuse me, it gives you a lot of fiber. And I just read something recently about there's some special qualities about apples that are really health-promoting. So an apple a day keeps a doctor away. You know, these axioms have a lot of truth behind them. And like you, I never ate avocados because I thought they were just all fat. Well, they are all fat practically, but they have fiber and they're just filled with omega-3s that are just wonderful for you. So when you eat an avocado, you're doing your whole body and your brain a favor. Just like when you eat eggs, for a long time people said, oh, you can't eat eggs, they're full of cholesterol. But if you eat a good egg, it's really satisfying, and you're doing your body a favor. So you're getting protein, which gives your cells structure. You're getting fat. You're getting vitamins and other nutrients. So you have to look at it. You're taking care of your body. You're doing your body a favor. You're supporting your brain health. That's what food is for. And if you eat really delicious food, and natural foods are just generally more delicious than processed foods, you're going to be satisfied and you can start to love food again, hopefully.
Right. No, exactly. And another side of this equation that you bring up in the book is exercise. Exercise to build a better brain, the chapter is called. And right in the beginning, people who exercise have bigger brains. And I took that part of your book and I immediately sent it to my husband. And I said, look at this, people who exercise. But it's a good point. We are in our healthcare system, or the way that we approach, with Western medicine is, and you even talk about this in the book, there's a problem and then we go in and we solve it, as opposed to thinking about it preventively. And I'm a big
right.
believer that if you're exercising, you don't have to be running a marathon. Just even if you just do the bare minimum, you're taking care of your body. And that's more important than I just burned 1,000 calories on the treadmill, whatever your goal is.
Right. You want to do something that you enjoy, and just walking 20 minutes or 30 minutes three times a week has shown to improve brain function. And so, yes, you have to find an exercise that you like and then just kind of do it regularly. And when you think about it, here's some of the things that exercise does. It creates new neurons. So that's how you have a bigger brain. It reduces shrinkage because it controls blood sugar and type 2 diabetes. It promotes blood flow, which carries oxygen to the brain, which helps it function more. It improves your mood, and if you want to fight depression, exercise is one of the best things that you can do because it releases hormones and increases levels of serotonin and dopamine. So if you want to fight depression, exercise is the thing to do. Walking, whatever it is that you enjoy, riding your bike, dancing, cleaning house. That's not as much fun, but it's a good exercise.
Exactly. It's kind of like, oh, I know I have to do this, but I guess maybe if you look at it as exercise, it might be a little bit more appealing.
Right. Kill two birds with one stone.
Yes, exactly. What I also really love about your book is at the back you have a chart. And in the chart, you're encouraging people to kind of monitor what they eat and how it makes them feel afterwards. Would you say that that's a good starting point to kind of figure out, just to start in the basement kind of, and, you eat an apple, how do you feel after that? You eat a bag of low-fat, chips, how do you feel after that?
Yes, exactly. So everybody is different. And we all respond to food differently, although there are, general guidelines. So one of the problems that a lot of people have is with gluten, and there's celiac disease that's expanding more and more, but there's something that's beyond that, and that's gluten sensitivity, and that causes brain fog. So if you're eating bread and pasta and you want to go to sleep and you can't think, you need to keep track of that, and maybe you have a gluten sensitivity. The other thing is sugar. Sugar is practically poison, and some people have thought about regulating sugar as we regulate alcohol because it is so destructive to our health. So if you eat a candy bar, how do you feel? Probably lousy. And that kind of diary will help you say, well, if I eat this, I feel good. If I eat this, I feel bad. And then you have a reason not just to maintain your weight or to look good, but because it makes you feel better.
And you know what's interesting about that too is that it can actually, I like how you say that everybody is different, because I don't think that when it comes to food, especially in the United States, we approach food that way. So for example, what I mean is for breakfast, you have to have cereal or an egg. For lunch, you should have a salad. For dinner, you should have some chicken with vegetables. But to be honest with you, I do better in the morning when I have protein. So sometimes I'm a vegetarian now, but I'll have protein for breakfast as opposed to cereal. Because the cereal, I feel like my body just zaps it up, and then 10 minutes later, I have no energy. But with protein, even though it's out of order in a way, it's not what we're supposed to do, I just figured out that that really works for me. And, when you're talking about brain health for life, that's part of the equation, too, is just figuring out what works for you.
Exactly, right. And I know in Europe, they're much more likely to have meats and cheeses and so on for breakfast. And it's really helpful if you have some protein and fat for every meal. Sugar or cereal is so highly processed. There's a little vignette in my book, and they talk about there's a group of a professor and his students who feed rats their cereal and water, and the box of the cereal comes in and water. And guess which rats die first? It's the rats that eat the cereal and the water. It's so highly processed. It has so many artificial things in it. It's just not good for you, and you process it almost immediately because it's just carbs. So what you're doing, including the protein, is really much more helpful. The cereal companies are beginning to lose some of their profits because people are realizing it's not really good for you. So they're advertising and saying, cereal isn't just for breakfast anymore. You should have it for lunch, or you can have it for a snack. It's crazy. You should not eat dextrose.
Yeah, and you know what else is crazy? I mean, these commercials, I don't see them as much anymore, but when I was growing up, it was Snickers. Snickers really satisfies you. And what is a Snickers bar? It's chocolate, maybe some nuts, some caramel, like all this sugar. When you need energy, you should eat a Snickers. And it's so counter, like it doesn't work because after you eat the Snickers bar, 10 minutes later, you've crashed. And I'm not just saying that because I watched the commercials, it's because I've done it before and I felt it. So
right.
How crazy is that? The advertisers are telling us, eat a Snickers bar for energy. It's like you have so many other options, you know?
Right. Have a piece of cheese or have an apple and some walnuts or something. You know, it's much more satisfying and it does pick you up. It's just pure sugar. Yeah, it's just, I can't watch the commercials on television. It's just so discouraging. Plus, if you have any kind of illness, take a pill. All you need
yes.
is a pill. So it's, what the purpose of the book was to help people learn what they should do and why they should do it, the effect that it has on your brain, and hopefully motivate people then to do what, it's not complicated. I mean, I didn't say you should have to have this kind of diet, but rather eat whole natural foods that are non-inflammatory for your body, and you should be just fine. So it's not complicated. And then exercise a little bit. Of course, get
right.
sleep and, you know, have friends and all those other things. But basically, it's pretty straightforward.
No, the book is extremely straightforward, which is really nice because you can pick up books on the shelf that can be very overwhelming when it comes to talking about food. And to be able to find a book or to pick up a book that's just so incredibly straightforward, but also can give you the awareness that you need. And you go into it in the book about, you know, pills and the pharmaceutical industry, you know, and it's just fascinating because we don't know these things, or maybe we know them, but we're just not paying attention. It's really interesting. So I know we're coming towards the end, and I know that you're really passionate about helping people with diet and overall health. So just the last couple minutes, I just want to give you the opportunity, if there's anything that you wanted to say, any words of wisdom, first steps that you wanted people to know.
Well, I think we need to choose natural foods that are tasty and delicious. We need to be sure that we incorporate fat into our diet and not be afraid of that. Put butter, use olive oil, eat avocados, eat red meat with fat in it. All those things are good. And then get rid of processed foods as much as possible. Be careful about all the grain and so on. And then what else do we have left? The protein. Make sure that you have protein in every meal. My website, I started blogging, and if people want to look at that, my website is brainhealthforlife.net. And when I wrote the book, I did want to make it accessible. So hopefully that's the only book they need to read. It will give them enough information to really improve their brain health.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad that I have a copy of the book. I honestly, to tell you the truth, I need to go to the grocery store, and I thought I could just bring this book with me. And, you know, because you give examples in the back, very simple examples of what a good protein is, or, you know, And I thought, I could just make my grocery list off out of this book and just take it with me. And, okay, I've got my saturated fats, I got mono. You know, it's just, it's that simple, which is really nice. Karen, I just want to thank you again for coming on. And just, there's lots of great information in your book, and we were able to get good information in 30 minutes that's not overwhelming, which I think is reflective of the book, you know, as well. But again, thank you for coming on, and I'm going to go out and buy myself some avocado.
Very good. Thank you for having me, and eat well and be healthy.
Take care. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye. Okay, again, the book is Brain Health for Life, Beyond Pills, Politics, and Popular Diets. And again, the book goes into greater details about the politics of food, popular diets. One of the aspects I found to be really interesting about this Brain Health for Life is the information that Karen presents about pharmaceutical companies and the amount of money that they make. And it's something that we need to know as people out there, consumers buying food, and you know, especially if you're in recovery and you're looking to change your life, you're making these big changes, you can also look at the way that food can help you feeling better overall, and exercise, of course, too. It gives you a bigger brain. Remember that. Next time you don't want to go to the gym, just think, I'll have a bigger brain after this. Okay, so for more information on Growing Up Chaotic, you can visit the blog at growingupchaotic.com, and we can also connect on Facebook at facebook.com/growingupchaotic, and on Twitter at growingupchaotic. And for Twitter, that's spelled GRWNGUPCHAOTIC. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Karen Unger for making this show possible. Again, the title of the book is Brain Health for Life, Beyond Pills, Politics, and Popular Diets. Until next time.